Golf Smarter, number 649. The 8 Traits of Champion Golfers. How to fine-tune your mental game with John Stabler of GolfPsych.com.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, John.
Hi, Fred.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. You're on the show. I approached you because I got a request from a listener to say, let's talk more mental game. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all over that.
Cool. Did they ask for us specifically?
Yes. Asked for the folks at GolfPsych.com.
Excellent. Okay.
Good. So then why don't we start with a little background of what GolfPsych.com is?
Okay. GolfPsych.com is our website, of course. Our business is called Sports Psych Incorporated. We incorporated that in 1990 in California. And we do business as GolfPsych. Dr. Deborah Graham earned her doctorate in psychology back in 1981 with a study of the LPGA Tour players' personalities. And with that study, she discovered that there were 8 personality traits where the frequent winners were different than the other players on tour. And that was a discovery. That wasn't something she hypothesized or, you know, speculated about. She discovered that there was a very statistically significant difference between the frequent winners and the other players, all good players. In 1988, we got together, and you could say GolfPsych was born in 89. We got married then, and we decided to focus on golf and create the business, and immediately recognized that a study of the ladies would be a hard sell, since most of the golfers at that time anyway, you know, 90% men. And so we did a study. We got permission from Dean Beeman, commissioner of the PGA Tour, to do a study on the PGA Tour and the senior PGA Tour. And we found the same 8 personality traits for the men as she had found for the women. Exact same design study, and really convenient for us, but it means that those 8 traits are really important for stroke play golf. And so that study on the PGA and the senior PGA Tour created a practice on tour. The players liked the information when we got the results back to them. And we started working with them and making suggestions and learning from them, frankly. Try this, try that. I like to do this. I like to do that. This works really well for me, et cetera, et cetera. And from that point, we worked on tour full time, out there for like 28 weeks a year for over 17 years. And we tapered off over the last several years and to the point where we're not going out on tour anymore, but we're certainly not retired. And every player we work with, the first step is to compare their personality to the frequent winner model. And immediately we can see where their natural strengths and challenges are for golf. And that body of work, the tools we've created to help work with our clients, has evolved to the excellent system and very effective system we have today. And just explain how effective it is. We've worked with over 400 tour clients now. That's just LPGA, PGA, and Champions Tour players. Hmm. We've worked with lots of other players, but at that level, over 400. And 21 of our clients have won 31 majors while we were working with them.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is not a deal where we went out and we hooked up with a couple really good players and they had success. And then we said, well, Tiger doesn't like this, so you should do it like this. Right? Instead, we've done a real scientific study, several of them, with the best players. Those studies gave us those results. And then we've applied that for years and years. And we found that we can work with just about anybody, help them learn how to emulate the frequent winners when they compete, and get their best golf.
We're all searching for our best golf.
Oh, yeah. And we seldom get it.
Yes, so true.
In competition, we seldom get it. You know, just to highlight how important those personality traits are, ask yourself the question. The top 50 players in the world, men or women, why are they at the top? You know, what are they doing different than the other players? Well, do they all swing the same and different than the other players? No. Are they all built a certain way? Is there like a perfect build for golf? No. You know, there's a big difference between, you know, Justin and Dustin.
Yeah.
Physically. Okay. Do they have equipment nobody else can get? No. Do they go to a swing coach nobody else can go to? No. Do they work harder? Are they more disciplined? No and no.
Wow.
We know from personal experience that those are not the keys. Those frequent winners are all individuals. They have marked differences in everything, including personality. But on these eight personality traits, they line up.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I'll stop.
Okay. Thank you. So one of the things about this podcast is that I sense that, and I try to talk to average golfers, not professional golfers.
Yep.
Or tour golfers. I know that there are a number of PGA instructors who listen, but I don't think that we have. I'm not talking to tour players. So, is there a significant difference in those personality traits between the major winners and the amateur golfer?
We have worked with over 400 tour players.
Mm-hmm.
We have worked with thousands of other golfers at all levels. And we have had a number of amateurs who've come through, taken the assessment, and lined up beautifully with the frequent winners.
Wow. So then, may I ask?
It doesn't guarantee that you're going to play well.
Right.
Okay. It means that there's no reason you cannot play well unless you've got some physical limitation.
Hmm.
But unfortunately, Fred, and one of the reasons I'm happy to talk on your program, Golf Smarter, is because there's a whole lot of dogma in golf that is wrong, and it is holding your amateur players back. There's a lot of I, you know, call it urban legend or call it, you know, universally accepted principles that are wrong. Combine that with the fact that the game, just the game, is super difficult. I submit the most difficult of any sport we've ever invented.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's no other sport that really literally compares.
Yeah.
And the things about golf that make it hard for a human, one of the biggest ones is the ball just sits there. Oh, man. So we can think about all kinds of stuff. We've got all kinds of time. Now, yes, you're supposed to play your shot within a certain amount of time on tour. Amateurs get upset if their partners take forever to play a shot. But it's nothing like other sports. Here comes the pitch. You got to swing or wait. I mean, there's no time to think. So you can be reactive. Those sports are easier for a human because you don't have that opportunity to think and try to control and second guess and doubt and fear that happen in golf. And that, now let's compound that. Our wonderful technologies, high-speed cameras, slow motion, video replay, the golf magazines, the Golf Channel, and a lot of teaching pros constantly tell us how to do it, how to swing. And what we must make sure of to swing well and consistently. It's universal. And so you now have a person, an amateur, who has heard about, I've got to make sure of this and make sure of that, make sure my alignment's good, make sure my grip, make sure my posture, make sure my takeaway, make sure I get to some point at the top, et cetera, et cetera. And they can do all that because the ball just sits there. I've had amateurs come through my schools that have never in their life, I'm talking about older guys, played a golf shot without two or three swing thoughts. Not once.
At least.
And then we bring them into the school and we eliminate all the swing thoughts for the whole weekend. And they're like, flabbergasted. They're just completely blown away. The game becomes so much better, so much more fun, and they hit the ball better. Because now their attention is on hitting the ball, not on their body and their club and trying to control it. When you play other sports, let's say tennis, here comes the ball. You have to recognize what it's doing. You have to anticipate where it's going to land and how it's going to bounce. You have to move to it. You have to get the racket in the right position in your hand. And then you have to hit it. And in your mind, you have an idea whether you're going down the line or cross court, whether you're going to cut it or topspin or, you know, that happens in a flash. And if you think about where your hips are, or you think about making sure you get your left foot in the right spot, or you think about your grip too much, you're going to blow it. It's not going to work. Well, that's what we've been doing with golf. And it's part of the industry. It's just everybody accepts it. And it's wrong.
I'm kind of blown away here, and I have 75 questions I need to ask.
Yeah, before. Please.
But first, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. John, I'm not sure where to start with this. Do we start with the eight traits, or do we start with the dogma that you said is, you know, and then which leads to which here?
I think your amateurs are going to benefit from the discussion of how to play. And then we can talk about the personality, which is going to seem commonsensical, but I'll be able to give lots of insights too in that regard, which will be interesting to them.
Absolutely.
But let's talk about the basics, the dogma. Okay. So how do you learn to do anything? How do you learn to throw a ball? Well, you see other people throw. You pick something up and you try to throw it. It probably doesn't go real good. But you keep picking it up and you keep throwing it. Maybe you get a tip or two. But after a while, you can throw pretty good. When you first start learning to throw, your attention is on what your body's doing and how it all feels. And you're starting to think about, okay, do this, do that. Make sure your, you know, arm goes back like this and your hips go. But it's not very long before you're not thinking about that stuff. You're thinking more about how it feels in your hand, how it's going to sail through the air, how far it's going to go, et cetera. Agreed?
Absolutely. Okay. Are we getting towards unconscious competence here?
Well, that's a fun terminology and concept. And it's what we accomplish in all the other sports. The exceptions might be foul shooting in basketball and maybe pitching in baseball, where all the action comes from you. Okay. And in basketball, one of the best examples, I guess, is Shaquille O'Neal, or maybe one of the worst examples. A great athlete, no question. Three guys hanging on him, back to the basket, and he can fake and he can move and he can shoot off balance and make the basket. Put him on the foul line. Nobody in his face, nobody touching him. It's exactly the same shot every time. And he looks like he's throwing a brick up there. Because he doesn't have movement. Because he has lots of time to think. Because he's got a lot of doubt. And so he's probably had, you know, saying, okay, now make sure your elbow, or make sure it rolls off your fingers, or his attention is on how to do it instead of just doing it. Right?
Yep.
I'm not saying you shouldn't practice your swing. I'm not saying it's not important to get in a good position at the top. I'm not saying that, you know, take away, you know, there's some importance to it. What I'm saying is, if you focus your attention on those things, then you will interrupt the trained sequence of nerve impulses that enable you to swing without thinking about the swing. In other words, the objective of all of our practice in any sport is to learn the movements and the feels. And then, like Nike says, to just do it. And the best athletes, they just do it like unbelievable. Yet when they come to golf, ball just sits there. Everybody said how important this and that is. Oh, and the ball's no longer in your hand. You got a club in between you and the ball.
But you have that in tennis, too.
Yes. The same club every time.
That's true.
And the very limited selection of shots in tennis. How many different shots and different type of shots do you play with a sand wedge?
Right.
chip in, sand shots, you know, lob wedges from 50 yards, full wedges, et cetera, knockdowns, cuts, fades, draws, hooks, with every club, right. Even putting. Right. Same club, hopefully every time. But the green's different. And the green's not perfect. So if you're thinking about your stroke on putting and you're trying to line up that putt perfectly with your putter, line on the ball, line on the putter, and make sure you stroke through just exactly so, you're likely to be one of the worst putters around because you're not athletic. You're not allowing yourself to just do it. You've lost your connection with the putt itself and the feel of the ball rolling across the green and the feel of the ball taking the break and going in the hole. So practice your mechanics, practice your stroke, but only make that part of your practice. And then, and I suggest at the end of every practice session, play golf. What the amateurs, most of them are doing, they're playing golf swing. They need to play golf. And so when you're playing golf, you have a routine that mentally has you doing three basic things. Calculations before the shot. Everybody's doing that. And you're choosing the club and the target and the shape of the shot. That's a left brain thing. Left brain's very good at analytical. But left brain is lousy at athletic. Once calculations are done, then the athlete, the right brain, needs to take over. And from there on through impact, it needs to be right brained. As soon as you start measuring, judging, critiquing, or trying to control, those are all examples of the left brain trying to play golf. And it doesn't work.
A question for you. Sometimes I guess it's the left brain, right brain thing, but I refer to some people as abstract thinkers and some as linear thinkers.
And in our terminology, we call them abstract and concrete.
Okay. I can deal with that.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
yep.
are abstract better golfers, or does it not make any difference?
Okay. On a bipolar scale, which is what we have with our study, one of the champion traits is called abstract thinking. And on that scale, on the left side of the scale, a one is very, very concrete style thinking. And on the right side, a 10 is very abstract thinking, very analytical, very, very busy mind. And our research said that the frequent winners are right in the middle and just slightly on the abstract side of that scale. They are not high abstract. And I can give you a little example of that some people, many people, listeners will know, Gary McCord, golf commentator, a witty guy.
Yes.
He played 376 PGA Tour events in his regular tour career. He made 242 cuts. So clearly, he's a good player. Zero wins with all those chances. Okay. Mm-hmm. We hooked up with Gary to get him ready for the senior tour. He'd known us for a while, but he said, you know, I'm commentating. I love my life. I don't want to go nuts practicing and change my swing and, you know, get super fit and stuff just to take advantage of the senior tour. Let's work on the mental side. Let's see if we can get some mileage that way. Mm-hmm. And, of course, first thing we did was the assessment. And on this particular trait that we're talking about was Gary's Achilles heel. It was the key. He's very high abstract on that scale, 9 or 10, okay? Which means when he's playing golf, it's really hard to pick one shot and trust it all the way. He looks at the shot, and he can see 4, 5, 6 different ways to play it with all the ramifications. In other words, high abstract, they can see multiple options easily. And when arousal goes up, like it does for all of us when we compete, his mind gets busier. Now, on tour, you've only got, first guy has 45 seconds to arrive and play his shot. After that, 40 seconds. Well, Gary gets the ball, and he was often still thinking about it as he got over the ball, debating which way, changing targets, changing the shot. So he was not achieving what we call good commitment. He had left brain still way active, almost up to impact, if not all the way. And that was hurting. That was ruining him. The reason he didn't get it done. And so we helped him understand what to do about that, basically quieting his mind, going with his first impressions, stop debating, and trust it all the way through impact. His rookie year on senior tour, he played 17 events, and he won twice.
Wow.
Yeah, same guys. He couldn't beat them on the regular tour. Yes, your rookies have a little advantage, but, you know, Bernhard Langer can still play.
Yeah.
You know, at 60. So it's that we helped Gary recognize where he was getting off track and get back on track. Now, the same thing applies to your amateur golfers. Overthinking, because we have all the time, because we only get one whack at this, and every shot counts. Well, as soon as those conditions are true, what does a human naturally do? They get careful. They get deliberate. They try to make sure everything's just so, which puts them right back into that golf swing thing. And they become inconsistent. And because they don't understand why it's not working, they get more deliberate and more careful and more emotional after a little bit. And it all hurts their golf. Basically, it takes away the golf abilities they had, so they don't play to their ability. And that is exacerbated when your outcomes matter, like in the club championship.
Great. I don't want to take all of your time today. Well, actually, I do, but I'm not going to. But I'd really like, can we just do an overview of the 8 traits?
Yeah, happy to.
Thank you.
And on our website, golfpsych.com, you can see a profile. Okay, we have several profiles up there without names on them. But they are tour players. And you can see the scores. There are 16 trait bars. That means there's 32 personality traits that we measure with our assessment. It takes 30 or 40 minutes to do. Only 8 of those personality traits are the keys. So in order on the profile, the first one at the top of the page we call focus. This is a bipolar scale. On the left is cool or introverted, very introverted, and on the right is warm or extroverted. That is wide external focus, very aware of what's going on around you. On the left, introverted, narrow inward focus, can block things out like crazy, okay? Get super focused. Now, the frequent winners are slightly to clearly above average on the introverted side. They're not extremely introverted, you might say, well, gosh, a one on that scale would be perfect for golf. Well, it won't give us a lot of trouble unless you're focused on the wrong things. Okay. So on that first one, we help players develop a mental routine. I like to call it the athletic shot process, to play a golf shot, to narrow the focus to the right things and to access the right brain to play the shot athletically and freely. And when they do that, their consistency goes way up and their ball striking improves beautifully. So that's the first one I'm talking about on that profile. These are not in any importance order. It just happens to be the way the personality assessment folks organized.
Good to know.
Okay. Yeah. The second one, concrete versus abstract thinking. We've already talked about that one. The frequent winners are right in the middle and slightly on the abstract side of the scale. Okay. So they can think their way around the course just fine, and they don't tend to overthink. Okay. The third trait is emotional stability. On the left side are people that are very emotionally reactive, and on the right side, very emotionally stable. The frequent winners are on the right side, on the very emotionally stable side. They are all the studies, all the groups lined up on 7. But in our experience, 8, 9, and 10 could also be champion scores. We just found no issues for golf on the emotionally stable side. Now, whether you're on the emotionally stable side or the emotionally reactive side, you can get just as angry. Okay? You can get just as frustrated. But the people on the stable side, it takes a lot more to get them there. Okay? Mm-hmm. The people on the emotionally reactive side, that's like an Irish temper. These people just, you know, explode at the least little bit. I think you remember Steve Pate on tour got the nickname Volcano because he would erupt so often. So, and the importance here is to understand that experiencing your emotions a little bit is okay, but more than that, it's not okay, because when you experience your emotions, you release chemicals, and all of those chemicals, things like adrenaline, norepinephrine, cortisol, and glucose, are all bad for your golf. They tighten up your big muscles a little bit. They take away your touch and feel, your fine motor control. They make your brain busier. They widen focus generally. So it's really important that you manage your emotions while you're on the golf course. You don't want to go real high. You don't want to go real low. You want to stay more centered, more settled. You need to learn to accept your outcomes and not beat yourself up. Okay. That's emotional stability.
Excellent.
All right. Fourth trait, submissive versus dominant. On the left side, submissive. These players are, how should I say it? They're followers, not leaders. They tend to go along with the group in other life. They are not going to make the decisions for the group. In golf, they tend to play safe. So you find the submissive side being very consistent score-wise, but they seldom go low and they seldom go high. Usually pretty consistent. But they're playing shots where they have super confidence, what you would call very safe shots, means they're not taking enough risk. The frequent winners are slightly on the dominant side. They're not extreme dominant. Phil Mickelson is extreme dominant. Okay? He might be a 12 on the scale. But he's got this incredible short game that saves him all the time. So he gets away with it. Baum and Gouge, same thing. But the research said slightly dominant. Dominant folks are leaders. They're aggressive. They're always pushing. a 10 on this scale is going to hit driver on every par 4 and par 5. They're going for every par 5 and 2. They're swinging out of their shoes, and they have a train wreck in the round typically. They can go low, though, if they get by without the wreck, but they can also go high. So the frequent winners are in between, slightly on the dominant side, and game plan is what we use to help solve that issue. The player that's being a little too reckless, or the player that's being a little too safe, and we work with them on course management and game plan before they get on the course, help them sort out best ways for them to play the course. All right. The fifth trait is called tough-minded. On the left side is very tough-minded. On the right side is very tender-minded. Tender-minded folks care about others. They're sympathetic, empathetic. Tough-minded are not. And they're also selfish and self-centered. Mm-hmm. Well, the frequent winners are on the tough-minded side. They are slightly to clearly above average on that side as a group. So on the golf course, you're selfish and self-centered. You only care about your ball, your game, and you ignore the other players. You don't worry about how they're doing. You don't care how they're doing. And if they hit it in the rough, in the hazard, tough mind is going to go look a little bit. The ball's not obvious. They're going back to their ball. Because that's the other player's problem. It's not my problem. That's tough minded. Okay? All right.
Wow.
Now, the sixth trait mm-hmm. is self-assurance. On this scale, super self-assured is a 1, and super apprehensive, the opposite, is a 10. The frequent winners score on the self-assured side, slightly to clearly above average, not extreme. But through our work, we've come to recognize they were already there. Their personalities, they're self-assured, and it helps them win. It helps them deal with the adversity. It helps them deal with the bad bounce because they believe in themselves, they trust themselves, and they expect to do well versus the apprehensive, who is all about outcome and score. If they don't get a good outcome, a good score, they're miserable, and it means they're worthless. I'm talking about a 10, an extreme, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So you can see how being on the apprehensive side creates more pressure for performance on every shot. It makes that score that much more important because if they get a bad score, they're a bad person. Mm. And often the self-talk is horrendous. Miss a shot, they beat themselves up, they call themselves names. After a poor round, the apprehensive is going to be miserable all night, and their expectations for tomorrow are going to be bad. But after the same bad round for a self-assured, they're not going to like it when they walk off the golf course. They might be equally unhappy. But after a couple hours, they'll think about how it went. They'll think about why it happened. They'll come up with solutions and a plan, and they'll put the round behind them, and they'll have a nice evening. Hmm. And they'll expect to play better tomorrow. That's self-assured. And of the 8 champion traits, our opinion, our experience, it's the most important. And I almost don't care where you are on the scale. I'd like you to be more self-assured. And we have ways, Dr. Graham has ways to help you increase self-assurance. It doesn't mean you're not humble. You can still be humble. Doesn't mean you're going to be conceited. It just means you're going to like yourself more, believe in yourself more, trust yourself more, and that's going to be good for everything in life. Relationships, family, everything. So, seventh trait we call self-sufficiency. On the left is group-oriented. On the right is self-sufficient. The champions are on the right, very self-sufficient. That simply means they like to make their own decisions. They prefer it. Group-oriented people are better suited to team sports. Of the eight champion traits, this is the easiest one to work with, generally the least hurtful as far as challenges. But the player has to decide on the shot. And the high school coaches and the college coaches out there and the caddies that are clubbing their players are wrong. They can offer information, but the player has to decide. If the player's not deciding, the player's going to have a really hard time committing to that choice and swinging freely, which means it's not coming off. All right. And then the last of the eight champion traits, I think I'm getting through them quick enough here.
Yeah, it's amazing.
The last of the eight champion traits we call tension or arousal. On the left side, a one is super relaxed. Your couch potatoes on the one side. And a 10 is type A personality, driven, ambitious, or perhaps really frustrated. The frequent winners score in the middle of the scale and slightly on the relaxed side. Okay? Now, we have a device we use with our clients in our schools, and we sell them. It's called a mind meter. It's my invention. And it indicates how busy or quiet your mind is while you're playing a golf shot. It indicates whether you're left brain or right brain while you're playing a golf shot. We've had it for a little over 12 years now. Current form is on a smartphone. It's an app. It works really good. So with that, we have found that if the range on this 1 to 10 scale for optimum tension is between 4 and 6, okay, 6, which is average, slightly, not even slightly above average, right about average on the scale, 6 for driving and the long game, and you need to be around 4 for putting and short game. Because at the 4 end of the scale, you will have maximum touch and feel, and you will read the greens better. But as you go up this arousal scale, your abilities to read the greens diminishes, your touch and feel diminishes, and this is subtle. Most players can't understand why putts aren't going, why they just can't feel it today, or they can't read it today. How often have somebody said, you know, I hit a great tee to green, and I couldn't buy a putt. Mm-hmm. I was lipping out. I was short all day. I was, you know, I just, putting was horrible. 39 putts today. My God. It has everything to do with arousal. You can play well at 6-7 on the scale with your long game. Hit a great tee to green. But if you don't lower arousal around and on the greens, you're not going to have your best stuff. So it's mysterious. You can't figure out what's wrong, which creates more anxiety and keeps the arousal up. Yep. It keeps you from playing to your ability.
So I have a question for you then.
Okay.
If these are personality traits, are they moldable? I mean, if it's your personality, isn't that something that just is? Or can you shape your personality to fit these traits?
Excellent question.
Thank you.
Over the years, quite a few players have worked with us for a while, and then they come back and say, hey, I want to take the personality assessment again and see how I'm doing. And we say, nope. That's not what we're doing. Your personality is your personality.
Right.
We're not trying to change your personality all the time, except for self-assurance. and maybe tension. Instead, we're helping you understand how to think and operate on the golf course. So let's say you measure an 8 on the extroverted side of the focus scale. We cannot change you into an introvert. Okay? It's not what we're doing. But that extrovert, all you have to accomplish to play a golf shot well is really good focus for about 10 seconds. Hmm. And with the athletic shot process, even a 10 on that scale can do it. It's not as easy, but they can do it. So we've never given anybody the assessment and said, oh, dear, you know, I think you need to find another sport. We have not done that. Because we know, like Gary McCord, right? He's off the mark big time on abstract thinking. Yet with coaching, he can learn to operate like the frequent winners do when they play and be successful. After the round, be high abstract, work out physics problems, I don't know, whatever you want to do. But when you're playing, you keep it simple. Okay? And that's what we do.
Fascinating.
And it's one of the things that makes us so effective is that you are unique. Everybody that's listening to this is unique. You have a unique personality, and the combination of traits and the scores is unique. So we got to recognize that, but also understand that those trait scores are dynamic. That is, they do change. For example, let me explain that a little further. When you take the assessment, typically you're sitting down, you're fairly relaxed, and you're just answering personality questions. There's no golf questions. Okay? But when you go to play golf to compete, when score matters, I'll guarantee that you will go up the tension scale a little bit.
Oh, just slightly.
Yeah, depending on your thoughts. I mean, if you're struggling a lot with the yips or something, you're probably going to go up a lot.
Yeah.
But generally, if you care, you're going to try. You go up the scale a little bit. So if you're naturally lining up with the champions and then you go to compete, you might just go out of the range a little bit. But so would they. Okay? So working on the methods, using some really good abdominal breathing, you can keep yourself in the optimum range for golf with a little coaching, with a little, you know, with some feedback, biofeedback in our case. So that's what we do. As arousal goes up, there are four other traits that change that are affected. And you heard them when I talked about emotional stability. You go up the arousal scale, focus opens a little bit. Well, if you're a 2 on that scale, you're really introverted, it's not an issue. You're never going to be widely focused. It's just not happening. Your brain's going to get busier. So abstracts in the middle are going to become operate more high abstract. But again, we can quiet that down. Everybody becomes a little more emotionally reactive than they normally are. Okay? But recognize that, understand it, and we have ways to help you manage your thoughts, create the right attitude for competition, and stay more stable. Submissive players, when you go up the arousal scale, they tend to play safer. And dominant players tend to get more aggressive. Understanding that, you can now coach them appropriately. Work on lowering arousal. And for the, you know, the high dominance, okay, pick shots and targets that are a little more conservative, but swing freely. They have aggressive swings. It's okay. And the submissives, I want you to pick a couple spots in the round where you're going to go more aggressive. Not every shot, just a few spots. You know, cut the dog leg a little more, or play a little closer to the hazard, or go for that par 5 and 2 instead of laying back, if it makes sense for their game. So that's what we do. Yes. And your personality is somewhat fixed. When you're younger, it is changing. So when we work with juniors, we'll probably do the personality assessment every 2 to 3 years because they are changing. Mm-hmm. But for adults, you know, 5 years or longer before we'd recommend a retest just to see if things have changed. Mm-hmm. And also, if there's been a major life issue, you know, death of a parent or a spouse or a child or divorce or losing a job, those things have an impact on personality.
Sure.
Let me just give you a fast example to wrap up. We had an LPGA player come to us, and most of the players come to us when they're not playing great. And we ran her through the assessment, and we found out she's on the apprehensive side. She's emotionally reactive. She's too tense. And so, boom, things aren't working, and she's frustrated. So we started working on it, and we found out several things. Of course, she wasn't playing well, but Dad was on the bag.
Mm.
Dad was also managing her finances.
Mm.
He's acting like her manager. Okay, this is an adult woman. And her sponsors were pressing her to do their events, their pro-ams, their marketing. And she's not playing well. So we helped her take steps. We got Dad off the bag and off the management and out of the finances. Gave her control. Got somebody else that's not so close to her to help out. Hmm. Got the endorsers, the sponsors, to back off. Give her a break. Meanwhile, she found out her clubs, her irons, the last set of irons, came through from the factory with the wrong specs. Yeah, she trusted the factory. She shouldn't have. But anyway, got all that sorted out. And she went from the what we call the non-winner group to the near champion group. In other words, she won a couple times. And then she went on and won one more. She joined our frequent winner group. And her personality assessment did improve. Self-assurance improved, tension improved, emotional stability all improved because of all these frustrations and all these pressures that were beating her up. So it can change. And quite often for your amateurs, stuff in their off-course life can be messy. And it just takes a small thing on the golf course to explode. It comes out sometimes on the golf course. Deal with that or make an agreement with yourself that this is my time and I don't have to worry about that. I'll worry about that when I'm done. Relax, enjoy. It'll help me think better later.
Well, you know, I'm very lucky because I'm recording this for me, and so I can listen back whenever I want. But that's part of what I love about podcasts. There's so much unbelievable information in this conversation that it's the kind of thing that I know listeners will like, yeah, I'm going to listen to that again and again. I've had people say, I've listened to that episode 20 times. So this is truly amazing, amazing information. Thank you. So when someone goes to golfpsych.com, and that's golf, P as in Peter, S as in smarter, Y-C-H, golfpsych.com, what can they find there, and what can they take advantage of?
Okay, well, take advantage of, we've got a lot of good articles.
Great.
On the website, they're free. You can subscribe, sign up, so that every new article, it comes to you whenever we publish, again, free. Our book, The 8 Traits of Champion Golfers, you could buy it there, but I'll tell you, go to Amazon. It's cheaper. Okay, they can sell it cheaper than I can. And I have no problem with that.
Of course not.
Yeah. There is a, if you just like to dabble a little bit, we have a thing called the Mental Skills Assessment. It has 111 golf questions. It's not a personality assessment. 111 golf questions. It generates a report with recommendations on how you can improve your mental skills. It costs $49.95. And you can have it, you know, the assessment takes 15 minutes and the report comes shortly after with recommendations you can take on the course. And we've had lots of feedback that does great things for people. So those are the simplest, easiest things you can do. If you want to try to do it yourself kind of thing, we have packages of our products, the personality assessment, the mental skills assessment, and the online coaching system subscription in a package for just under $200. So you can see how you literally compare to the frequent winners on tour in terms of personality and get valid recommendations based on your personality. Mm. You can get the recommendations on improving mental skills from mental skills assessment, and the online coaching subscription has thought control methods. It has a video on the mental routine. It has a tour newsletter library. We wrote 39 newsletters for the tour, all good articles. You get access to that. And it has a system to help you get ready for your rounds, monitor how you're playing mentally, and learn from the rounds after. And every time you work in that system, I get an email, and I can see what you put in. And I will send comments back. There's no extra cost for that. So that's DIY, do it yourself. And if you want to do it really good, you throw the mind meter on top of that, and now you've got quite a good package for you or your junior golfer, or, you know, if you want to take it to the next level, if you want to figure out, you know, why things aren't working and put into play a system that actually works, that's a great way to go. And then if you get pretty far, but then you're not quite figuring things out, we're always available on the phone.
Fabulous.
So, and we charge for that time. We charge for that time, but that's how we make a living.
Sure.
But because of our experience, because of our systems, because of our research, we can be super effective, which means not a lot of hours on the phone to get where you want to go.
Wow. Well, John, thank you so much. You know, sometimes when these recordings happen, I'm hoping to get 30 minutes out of the conversation, but rarely do I get so blessed with doubling that. And I appreciate your time and your insights and your amazing website and study. Thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
My pleasure, Fred. Happy to answer any questions you got.
Oh, there are questions. There are many, many questions. There was so much to take away from that episode. I hope that there was value in it, as much value for you as there was for me. After we finished recording this conversation, I was telling John about our weekly giveaways that have just begun, and he enthusiastically offered to provide a Golf Psych personality assessment and half-hour phone consultation to review your results. What I love about a prize like that and the others that are being provided by some of our instructors is that anyone in the world can win because it's all online. There's no shipping that we have to deal with. Those of you who win something that is a hard good, right? Well, like some of our other prizes that we're giving away. And if you live outside the continental U.S., you'll see it in the rules, but you will be asked to pay for the shipping outside the continental U.S. You don't have to do it. We can get you something else. All right. Speaking of winners, our first winner of the three audiobooks courtesy of Dr. Joseph Parent at Zen Golf is David Pemberton of Ellettsville, Indiana. Congratulations, David. I'll be sending you an email with the instructions on how to obtain your gift of Zen Golf, Zen Putting, and Golf, the Art of the Mental Game, all three audiobooks. Our next prize is from our guest in episode number 646 and others, Roger Gunn. Roger's offering to have you send him a video of your swing and then provide an online lesson based on what he sees. Now, we've received a number of entries for our last prize. They came in after our deadline of Sunday at midnight Pacific time or 3 a.m. Eastern. If that was you, don't worry, because you're still eligible for this week's prize and every prize we're offering through the end of the year. That's right. Enter once, and you're eligible for every prize, including more online golf instruction. And if you've won, like David, you're still eligible to win more. So, David, you're not knocked off the list here. You're just going into a bigger list, but you are eligible to win again. So good luck to you and to all of you. I thank you very much for participating. And stay tuned for some great gifts. We're giving away a Seymour putter like Zach Johnson uses, and a Knuth Golf High Heat 257 fairway driver. To enter, go to golfsmarter.com/giveaway. Again, that's golfsmarter.com/giveaway. And if you have any questions or issues with your game, then send me an email or call our toll-free line at 415-761-1498. Leave your question to be answered by one of our teachers on our Golf Smarter Academy. If you have any comments or suggestions or questions, use at Golf Smarter on Twitter or Instagram, or write to me directly by clicking on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.